Chapter 9. The Mother of Erda. The next thing I remember is being cold. The kind of cold you feel in the dead of the night trying to sleep with one eye open pressed up against a brick wall in some puddled back alley. The rain might be coming down on you, and the wind is up, and you wish you could go all the way down into sleep. Only you dare not because you know you're not the only one out there. There are the others shivering in the dark with you, all of them keeping one eye open and waiting for someone else to close both of theirs. I felt the cold at first like a faraway thing. It was a sensation inflicted on someone else, unimportant and not my problem. Then my body began to ache, first at the hips, followed by my back, and then up into my skull. I was laying down on a hard surface, and the more it hurt, the more I felt it. I became more aware as it continued to hurt, and pretty soon I found myself trying to dive back down into the darkness to escape it. But that never does work. My eyes were all wrong. That was the first problem. When I opened them, the world insisted on remaining black. I thought maybe they hadn't opened after all. But then I poked at one of them with a finger, into the side, not directly at the pupil. I'm not a fucking idiot. And when I felt that salty burn at the touch, I really began to panic. I couldn't see a fucking thing. I had my eyes open as wide as they would go, and they were as effective as if I had shoved my head up my own ass. I rolled over to my belly, got my limbs under me, and pushed up into a crawl. Everything was terrible. I still couldn't see. And now I was so dizzy that it reminded me of being incredibly drunk. My hips ached, my back ached, and now that I was moving around, the lower end of my body advised me that I needed a good shit. "Sometimes it just doesn't pay to try," I muttered, and began to laugh. Then the wind picked up again, blew an icy gust under my shirt, and slapped my stupid mouth shut. I crawled around for a bit, opening my eyes as wide as they would go, as if that would somehow help me to see. All it really did was cause me to blink more. The surface under my hands felt like rock. Between my palms and the ground was a thin layer of grit that rolled along as I moved, feeling as though my hands might slip out from under me if I wasn't careful. I rooted around like that, blind as a newborn pup, trying to locate I have no idea what. As I think back on it now, I'm not sure what I was trying to do. I don't know where I thought I was going. After a while, I noticed that my body did not feel right. I was becoming nauseous and felt as though I would fall at any moment. Then I ran face first into a rock wall and decided to leave off blindly crawling around. I rolled onto my back and lay there trying my hardest not to panic. It seemed I lay there forever, waiting for something to happen. I couldn't tell you now how long it really was, but back then it felt like damned near forever. I laid around like that, trying to make some kind of plan. I tried to devise some way to sense the direction back to my home, and came up with nothing. I could think of no way to hear, smell, feel, or taste the correct bearing, and understood that I was helpless. Wandering aimlessly, praying to cross some other traveler's path might be my only hope, which was horrible because I'd intentionally settled at the far end of Erda where not many people lived. I could try picking a direction and just go. And then what? There were four very basic directions. North and south along the length of the Verm, then east and west around the sides. The ground beneath your feet always felt flat no matter which way you went, so walking for a while wasn't going to yield any clues. I supposed if I picked north, I'd eventually run into the mountain. If I walked south, I'd either run into a city, or after a long enough period of wandering, I'd run into a town, or ultimately the Great Sea. East or west might find me walking forever, covering the same ground over and over as I walked the full circle around the world, never knowing I continued in an endless loop until I eventually starved or fell into some sort of ditch and killed myself. It occurred to me that the direction I ultimately chose might not be any of these, that I might select a path that was somewhere in between the cardinal four. and then I really would be fucked as I spiraled down that almost never-ending cavity for all time. The size of Erda was this great illusion, and it was maddening as you understood it more. When we were young, we thought we understood the nature of the world. All of it was visible, if you knew where to go. A high tower in the capital city, if you knew how to get there without being accosted by a guard. Or maybe a high tree out in the forest, or a decent hill. Get anywhere high enough and you can see all of it. All of it stretching north and south to the mountains at either end, and east and west along the belly and the spine. Though it all fades to a blue haze at great distance. You can see all of it at once from the high places. And when you're young, you think that means Erda must not be very large at all. You learn differently very soon, as you get older, and attempt to walk any meaningful distance. You walk for days and days and days, trying to reach someplace you're able to see the entire time, realizing soon that it's not getting closer at all. And you start to think that maybe it's you standing still, and Erda is moving under you. Only it's moving in the wrong goddamn direction. I was feeling really miserable as I laid there, wondering what in the name of Godan I was trying to do, until I noticed that all the black I was looking into had begun to change. It seemed to have gone less black, maybe some flavor of gray. I forgot my problems when I noticed this shift and studied it a while. I soon discovered it was a haze, like a blanket of mist hovering off the ground on a cold morning. Except the haze was inside of me, and it was thinning. I pushed into my eyes with the palms of my hands and discovered I could detect movement like giant shadows fluttering overhead. I calmed down. I only had to wait a while. The ground still hurt like a bastard, but I think I slept. Then I was aware again, and instead of black or gray, I saw brightness. It was all around me, as if light itself had enfolded me like a blanket. The air around me was still very cold, and it felt like I was being hit by a stiff wind from every direction. I could hear that wind, I realized. But the whiteness in my eyes defeated everything. It defeated my ability to think, to make plans, to feel how miserable I was, or even, I realized, to perceive how white that whiteness actually was. It was deafening, all-consuming. A fire that burned within my mind, insisting and erasing everything. But when I closed my eyes, it all went away, replaced with soothing darkness. And I began to laugh hysterically. I was relieved, so relieved I didn't know if I wanted to sob or shit. And when I opened my eyes again, that terrible whiteness was still there, but I felt like maybe now I could see something inside of it, like there was a new detail bleeding through at the center. That detail had a color that was somehow less destructive than the punishing whiteness, and though I could not yet tell what the color was, I knew it was there. I knew I was getting better, and because I was not yet hungry, I thought I might be getting better at a rapid pace. The ground beneath me still felt like torture against my bones, but the knowledge that my sight was returning made it somehow bearable. It was minutes, hours, or days before I could see enough to move around. I can't be any more precise than that. I still wasn't hungry, but I could see the world in defined shapes now. I could see enough to understand that I was up in the mountain. I rose to my knees and looked around. I looked north up the mountain face, then south, down the nearly sheer wall as it fell away from me toward the floor, far, far below, where the grass looked only like a green blanket. The trees were reduced to little puffs of darker green, and the powerful roar was only a blue-white line that emerged from the rock, now from somewhere so far below as to be invisible. I turned north yet again and looked up the slope. Close, far closer than I liked, I could see the ring of the mountaintops, all reaching toward each other like the jagged teeth of a great circular mouth. I felt the mountains must be teeth then, staring at that uneven ring, that they were the teeth of Erda. The aperture at the center looked minuscule from where I stood, and I wondered if it was really so. Would that opening still be minuscule if I climbed the rest of the way and stood before it? Or would it be a tunnel so great as to be considered a cavern, as big as what I'd once imagined the Cavern of Erda to be, back when I still thought I understood size and how proportion worked. It was so hard to know. Everything my eyes told me in that place was senseless, as if the world itself had abandoned the practice of making good, rational sense, instead proceeding according to its own rules, and I was just going to have to catch up. I picked up a small pebble, held it out at shoulder height, and released it. It fell back to the ground very, very slowly, as if it floated through water. I stooped to grab it, then found a larger rock. I held the pebble in my right hand, it was the size of a pea, and in my left was a rock as large as a hen's egg. I held them both out, let them go at the same time, and they both drifted back to the ground, slowly, like they sank through water, and landed gently. They both landed at the same time, the puffs of grit they dislodged commingling like two parts of the same organism. I understood then that I was higher on the mountain than I'd ever been before. It made me very aware of myself and my surroundings, and before long I could feel it within myself, in my guts, as though I was either falling or would fall any moment, and I would fall up into the sky and just float away forever. The more I thought about it, the more I could feel it. I became blackly sick, and as I crouched down by a boulder to purge my stomach, I feared the vomit might not descend, that it might blow back into my face and float slowly away, as I felt I would float away if I only jumped or climbed a little higher, or maybe stepped too hard. There was nothing within to purge, bless the Holy Family. After some time spent on my knees, my stomach slackened, and I was able to stand again. I was very shaky, though, at the hands and at the knees, and understood I must move carefully for fear of falling further up the mountain. I felt simultaneously heavy and light. I didn't know which was the truth and tried hard not to think about any of it. My stomach kept turning circles inside of me, and I hadn't any idea what it was going to do. I sat down with my back against a rock and waited either to vomit or regain control. I think I realized I was not alone before she spoke to me. But I can't say for sure anymore. I can't even be certain what her first words to me were. I could ask her now, of course, but I am ashamed to admit I don't remember. I think she said something like,
"Don't worry. The feeling will either pass, or it will go away when you leave this place."
She nearly frightened the life out of me the first time I saw her. I couldn't understand what my eyes told me, only that there was something in front of me sitting on top of a rock. We sat together within a small dirt shelf ringed by a fence of boulders. To my back was the drop-off and all of Erda beyond. To hers was the steep climb and the mountain iris. At the time, I did not realize what she was, only that there was a presence with me, that the shape was vaguely familiar, and that whatever it was the blackest thing I'd ever seen. It shifted, and I recognized the shape of a long, slender arm, the bend of a sharp knee. I thought I must be looking at a Dwergaz because it was so dark, and I suppose I began to panic. It's so hard for me to remember what happened now. I hadn't even registered the voice as feminine when she spoke, I don't think. But her voice has always run as deep as the soil, so I can hardly be faulted. The shape stood from the rock, and I saw that it was very tall, head and shoulders taller than me. I was of average height, but even so, I could tell her presence would dominate the largest night I'd ever seen. It approached me, and I scrambled into the grit like an idiot. The arms extended out toward me, and I scrambled more. I lifted my own hands to shield my face from what I assumed must be claws. It was coming straight at me, with its claws out. It was going to shred the flesh from my skull, and there was nothing I could do to escape it. I caught movement along its form as it approached. It distracted me, I think, and I must have stopped whimpering long enough to look because I remember this next part as being very quiet. The wind was still blowing, though I'd forgotten to be cold by then, but I couldn't hear a damned thing. I realized I wasn't seeing movement. I was seeing colors spreading along the darkness of its form like waves along the surface of a pond. Each time a foot stepped down upon the mountain, the blackness at the sole flared into a kind of orange-red, spreading over the top of the foot, up the ankle, and along the calf-like fire, dimming to yellow, then green, and eventually to blue and purple before finally fading away to black again. The colors died somewhere in the vicinity of the knees as it walked, and I found myself entranced. There were more colors, too. They stood out as I looked closer. Traceries of deep blue running over the body. Along the thighs, the rounded hips, the slender waist and torso, over the shoulders and along the arms. It pulsed and throbbed along the body as if the veins were somehow on the outside and I could see its blood moving, exposed to the open air. But the hands were coming at me, and I put my arms up as a shield. And then I could hear something. It reminded me of the long, wailing shriek a goat makes as it's devoured guts first by some wolf so fucking heartless it can't be bothered to kill its meal before setting to. Thinking back on it now, I suspect the noise I heard was my own wailing. The thing stopped coming at me and spoke again.
"I won't hurt you, Udo."
The voice sounded to me like the clouds turning through the sky. It was waves frothing over the rocks and the wind in the trees. It was the sound of my life ending. I rose to my knees and touched my forehead to the scree of the mountainside. I am so sorry, please. I beg you. Forgive."
"Forgive? What have you done?"
The digging." There was silence then.
"Digging? Oh, you poor man. You must think."
I heard the crunch of footsteps. They were coming closer.
"Here, Udo. Look at me."
"Oh, please. Please, I don't want to."
"Please, look, Udo. I promise you no harm."
That voice. It was the sound of horses being born, of babies crying and suckling at their mother's breasts, the sound of cooking food, and children laughing as they ran through the streets. It was the sound of moaning whores and priests at prayer, and of men and women marrying, and armies clashing. The sound of birth, death, life, love, youth, and age. It was the voice of a woman. I looked. Her hand with long, slender fingers lifted, pointed at the throat. I saw the index finger make contact at the hollow between the collarbones, and where it touched, those same rainbow colors radiated out like rings in a pond. She drew the hand downward in a line toward the belly, leaving a multicolored wake that spread out to the shoulders and ribs, and where her finger passed, the skin split open like an overcooked sausage casing. It separated and spread apart. Beneath was more skin. Yet this skin was not as black as the outer layer. It was a rich shade of brown, like the soil itself, and it picked up the light of Sunna so that it glowed. I could see ribs and muscle under the surface, two small breasts with the darkest, most perfect nipples I'd ever encountered. All of her was deepest brown, very dark, so dark as to be nearly black, but not quite black. The only way I could tell she was not truly black was because the outer layer, what I now understood to be her clothing, was the blackest thing I'd ever seen, blacker even than my loss of vision. It was a black so deep it made everything else in the world a shining beacon by comparison. I looked into her face and saw it was the same as her true body. She had no hair at all. The shape of her skull was perfect. As perfect as the rest of her body, and her eyes were very large and deep. Her lips were thick and wonderful, and her neck was as long and slender as her limbs. She was a statue chiseled from the heart of the darkest granite I'd ever seen, brought to life by some sort of magic, maybe breathed to life through the very exhalations of Erda. She was the most beautiful creature I'd ever seen. Tears began to run from my eyes, even as my body responded with the fiercest, most painful erection I'd ever experienced. I lowered my head in shame. Udo? She asked. I think I said that I loved her, or that I would die for her. Maybe I said both, I don't remember.
Look at me, Udo.
I must not.
Why?
I do not deserve the sight. She laughed.
Don't be ridiculous. Look at me. Please.
I was horrified that she should have to say please to someone like me. I looked. The clothing she wore was sealed shut again, and it was easier to see her. It was hard to detect her breasts when the outer skin was closed, and I could look her in the eye. It was a relief. It had been too much like looking at my own naked mother.
You know who I am?
She asked. I had to work my mouth around a bit to get the words moving. You are Ing. She laughed. It sounded like glass shattering, or snow falling, like icicles ringing together.
Why do you think this?
Your skin, your true skin, is dark, like the finest, healthiest soil I've ever seen. It is as though you have been molded from the soil. I can only imagine you are the great mother of the world.
And if I'd chosen a different form? What if I'd come to you with a body as white as your own?
Then I would say that you have the ability to choose your own form and therefore must clearly be a god. She said things to herself in between more laughter, but I do not remember what she said. She blessed the ground by sitting upon it and smiled. Her teeth were the whitest, most perfect things I'd ever seen.
You may call me Ing. And I agree with your assessment. This is a very fine body. Is it not beautiful?
It is indescribable, I moaned.
It is my favorite.
She nodded.
The others don't understand why such a thing would matter to me, but it does.
The others? Oh my, you mean the others?
You may say their names, Udo. I've said you won't be harmed.
I would rather not.
As you like.
Please, Great Mother.
Ing will do.
Great Mother Ing.
Just Ing, Udo.
I swallowed, then worked very hard to get it out. Ing. Please. What happened to me? How did I get here? I remembered I was... I trailed off. I couldn't say the next part.
Yes?
She asked. I was lower, down by the mountain foot.
You were going to say something else,
she prodded. No.
Udo.
I was digging. I looked away. Her hand reached down and brushed my cheek. It was very warm and felt quite good.
The Ruhr broke through into your little hole and buried you, Udo. My children fetched out your body when it happened. They had been watching you for some time, you know.
Your children? You mean the Dwergas? Her smile was so terribly wonderful, I felt as though I would fall off the mountain every time I saw it.
Yes, my children. Do not fear them, Udo. They will not hurt you.
I never saw them.
Of course. They do not like to be seen.
I tried to look away, but her hand kept bringing my eyes back to her face. I felt like a bird being hypnotized by a serpent. I thought they were not real, I said.
It is all right.
I thought they were not real. A fiction designed to keep people like me in their place.
It is all right, Udo. They do not require your belief.
Oh, Mother, I am so sorry. My vision swirled, and I blinked hard to spill the tears away. When she smiled, it broke my heart, and she said,
"Do not be sorry if you can manage it. You've done us no harm."
She was silent for a long time while she waited for me to regain control. I tried to suppress it, but the sobs broke from me at every breath, like breathing without sobbing was impossible. But after a while, I calmed down. And she waited quietly for me the whole time, that gentle smile a light for me to find my way back. When I was no longer a slobbering mess, I asked, "The Dwergas brought me here?"
"Yes."
Why?
I asked them to.
Oh. Oh, great God, forgive me. I didn't know. More laughter then.
Of course you knew. Everyone knows not to dig, Udo.
Her laughter made the reproach into something I could survive.
What is it? She asked.
Please, Ing. It's not my intent to question you, but I've always wondered. I mean, I thought I'd figure it out, but I was clearly wrong. They're real, Godan helped me. But even when I believed, why? Why mustn't we dig?
Well, it's obvious, isn't it? She asked.
No. Forgive me, please. I'm a stupid man. It's not obvious at all. Laughing, she said,
You're in the belly of Erda. You don't want to cut through the skin into the outer chaos, do you?
It took me a moment to catch my breath. It's real, I panted. It's all real.
What is real, Udo?
I don't know. She rested a hand on my knee and said,
That is as good a place as any to begin.
Why am I here? I pleaded. Why have you saved me? Why would a god such as you have any time at all for someone like me?
Give me your hands, Udo.
She held her hands out to me, palms down. Her fingers were long and smooth, like young willow shoots, as black as the rest of her. And I could see around the sides where the skin from the palms crawled up from beneath. It was lighter than the rest, still darker than my own skin, though it appeared nearly pearlescent when compared to the rest of her body. I was fascinated by this, by the perfect beauty, and by the smoothness, the infinite traceries of fine wrinkles, the powerful veins running beneath the surface, and each brown, shining nail. On the back of each hand was a single diamond of gold set into the skin like a jewel. They glittered when they caught the light. I saw my hands raise from the tops of my thighs as though controlled by some outside will. They reached out to her like roses reach toward Sunna, bending always to the south to meet his rays. She took my hands in hers and turned them this way and that, examining them. And she said,
These came out perfect. I can't detect a difference at all.
I looked down at my own hands, wondering what she could possibly mean. They were the same as always, square and stupid, calloused, scarred, and unwise. I looked at the back of my hands when she turned them over and noticed the same golden diamonds, a mirror to match the set on Ing's own hands. She enfolded mine in hers,